From the headquarters of Swinnerton, this is the Modern Built Environment podcast, featuring exclusive interviews with world-class thought leaders, executives, and civic leaders committed to a better and more beautiful built environment. Established in 1888 and built on a foundation of integrity, trust, and collaboration, our history has prepared us for this moment. Possibility is limited only by our imagination. We know what tomorrow can bring because we've seen thousands of tomorrows and are prepared to shape what comes next. Pride of ownership, peace of mind. Our podcast is hosted by Tom DiOro of The Modern Architect at KZSU at Stanford University. Go to swinnerton.com/podcast.
Thank you, Maggie. For our guest today, we're honored and excited to welcome Senator Kevin Murray, is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Weingart Center Association. He has served in this position since 2011. Prior to his current role, Senator Murray founded the Murray Group in 2006, a legal and consulting firm specializing in public policy and entertainment, where he was managing partner. Before founding the Murray Group, Senator Murray served as Senior Vice President at the William Morris Agency, the nation's longest running and most diversified talent agency. You can find him and the Weingart Center at online at weingart.org. That's weingart.org. Senator Murray, happy to have you on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's been great to talk to you, especially in our digital green room, as we say. We'd like to start our show off with, if there's a quote or a mantra, it's a really more my style, but what it does is that we found the audience really likes it because it gets an essence of who you are, not just your great accomplishments and your achievements, but is there any a quote or a mantra, a prayer that you can recall that really means much to you that you might have heard, you know, even as a youth?
That's kind of interesting. There are, of course, many across the years, and then you try and think of which one that you use most often. And frankly, the one that I end up going back to in the things that I do is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. That seems to be one that I end up repeating more often than others.
Fascinating. Why do you think does that matter to you so much? Personally and even professionally?
Well, because you can, in my business, and I assume in many businesses, you can sit in these meetings with people, sometimes across the table from somebody you're negotiating with, and sometimes with your own people, where you spend endless amounts of time trying to solve every issue with the perfect solution. And that keeps you from moving forward with things that could be very, very good. And so I'm one of those people that has a touch of ADD. My wife would say more than a touch. And I want to get stuff done and I want to move forward. And if you get bogged down trying to get to perfection, and particularly in building things, in building projects, in dealing with the government, it almost never is perfect. You know, there are always some compromises you have to make for time, for budget, for schedule, for all sorts of reasons. So, you know, do your best, try and make it very good, but don't spend your time reaching for perfection because that'll keep you from moving ahead at all.
You know, I'm looking at the Weingart Center's Innovate Solutions to Break the Cycle of Homelessness. That innovate solutions, that I think there's a nice segue into that, is to innovate. That's not something that I'm not sure, at least in my experience, a lot of people really focus on is innovation, but obviously it's a byline.
Yeah, you have to be, particularly given the focus on homelessness now, and that's what we do, you have to be willing to try a new thing. I think my great benefit to this business of trying to serve homeless is that I didn't come from a social service background. So, and it does tie into the perfect be the enemy of the good concept, in that I am not hamstrung, using my word, hamstrung, by some orthodoxy that I came up in. So I can look at most situations at any given time and try to find what is the best solution at that time, rather than trying to follow some precepts. So we all come to just about everything with some kind of preconceived notion. And so while structure is good and philosophy is good, you can't let them be, you know, the chains or a cage of how you operate.
Maybe a bit of a stretch of a question, but how much do you think courage has to play in being innovative and being someone who goes not necessarily against orthodoxy, but at least willing to look at another way?
Well, you know, I certainly am not trying to describe myself as courageous, but I think, yeah, you've got to have enough confidence in yourself and your organization and your thought process to challenge, you know, because innovating is the same as challenging. So if you're doing something new, you are challenging what the current orthodoxy is or the way people have done it before. And as I make decisions, I operate on, you know, two philosophies. First, as a manager, rather than go through some linear checklist, I tend to say, what's wrong with this picture? So if I get a budget, if I get a contract, if I get a, you know, a certain set of facts for a decision, my first thing is, what's wrong with this picture? And so the willingness to challenge whatever is in front of you, even if for a moment, I think is what fills that out. Courage, you know, it could be called courage, but certainly I would more describe it as a willing to challenge whatever's in front of you.
And that second philosophy.
Go ahead.
The second philosophy of what's wrong with the picture is, do you envision how it may look?
It's not so much that, it's that given a set of facts, I first start off with, does that make common sense? So some people get a piece of paper, the numbers add up to them, and then they pass it along to other people. And what I try to challenge my staff to do and the people I work with to do is first take the top line look of, does that make common sense to you? Just common sense, not anything that is revolving around your expertise. And frankly, that solves a lot of problems to me. You know, the thing that goes right along with that is the simple question, why? So if somebody says, you know, we can't do X, Y, or Z, or we need to do X, Y, or Z in this particular way, you know, why? So justify to me why that has to be done that way. And then what sometimes you find is the response will be, well, that's the way we've always done it, or that's the way they've always. So then you say, well, is there a different or better way to do it? And most of the time, frankly, there isn't. You know, most of the time, orthodoxy has come to be what it is by trial and error over long periods of time, and this was the best way to do it. But, you know, some percentage of that time, you're going to either find a better way, or most importantly, a better way that fits for you.
And that better way, and I'm going to let's circle back to that, the why. In your experience, why does the why matter?
It makes people take the extra step of thought. So, you know, orthodoxy is also simplicity and frankly, a little bit of laziness. So if we've been doing something a certain way for a certain amount of time, that means that the person who's in charge of that doesn't have to think about how to do it. So it forces people to think about how to do it. And again, going back to the perfect enemy of the good, you don't want to bog yourself down in challenging every process that you have every time either. But you want to try and make it most efficient for you most of the time. You know, we've had some recent situations, you know, where somebody said, hey, we need to, you know, we're in the construction context. We need to have a generator for our crane. So we need to put the generator here. Well, why do you need to put it there? Are there other options to put it there? And maybe that's really the thing to drill down in. Are there other options? And would any of those other options be better than the one that you're proposing? And so I think that's the concept, is question everything, but also don't bog yourself down in the questioning. So, you know, you don't want to spend all day long questioning everything, particularly things that have been vetted over the years, but you want to just take a look at the picture and see if it can be better.
This is excellent. You're listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast, powered by Swinnerton. We're talking today with Senator Kevin Murray, President and CEO of the Weingart Center. For more information, feel free to visit weingart.org. That's weingart.org. Senator, can you share with us, you know, some recent, you know, projects that you're working on, working with the Weingart Center, if you're at liberty to do so?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have two current projects with Swinerton. You know, one is a 51-unit building for senior and elderly homeless on Santa Monica Boulevard in Los Angeles. What's interesting about that is that it's a modular project. So the units are prefab and then trucked to the site. And what's interesting even about them is it's not just a single unit like you think of. They actually prefab two units and the hallway across from each other, and they bring them to the site and load them onto the site. So that's going to cut construction costs probably by construction time by about a year. Construction costs also are a little cheaper and also cause less disruption to the community. So I think that that's a pretty innovative program that we're doing with Swinerton. And this, again, goes back to your question orthodoxy discussion. We're building a 19-story, 278-unit building, also with Swinerton as the contractor, to house homeless. And when I first proposed, someone gave me some great advice because I was talking about this building to people and I wanted to have scale and impact. And everybody told me it was either too expensive or you couldn't do it or you couldn't build a tower for low-income people. And someone gave me the best advice, which was propose the biggest thing you can and wait for people to tell you no. And we proposed this building and no one said no. In September, we've broken ground on this 278-unit tower. And it is, as I understand it, the biggest such building in the state, certainly in the history of the city. So those are the two projects that are working now.
I like you said, wait till you think of the biggest projects you think you can do and wait for the no. How have you also done this? And if it's too much to ask, let me know. But have even done this professionally where you were told this is what your sights were, this is what you would wanted to accomplish, and people or someone may have said, no, you can't do that. And then you.
Well, I think that frankly frequently happens.
Okay.
So, and again, it dovetails back to part of our other conversation where if you are trying to do something out the norm, and you know, only interesting stuff is stuff that's different. It's not interesting to do the same thing that you've done before. It goes back to my wife think, you know, in my ADD, but that doing stuff you've done before is not interesting. So, you know, it's valuable and it's something you're good at probably, and you've developed expertise, but not interesting. So often when you propose something or you have an idea that is a little bit different than what people have done in the past, you will get people who are naysayers because particularly if you deal with, you know, a lot of government, you know, governments and bureaucracies are designed on processes that are repetitive. So they want you to do it their way and do it the same way that it's been done before. And what you find out, and this will be also interesting for your listeners, I think, what you'll find out is that the bureaucrats, they're kind of intrigued when you have a new idea too. So if you can do this, you know, I've had, you know, recent experience with, for instance, the Department of Planning in Los Angeles, where if you call them up and you say, hey, I want to do this a little bit differently. You know, how can I do, you know, you got to phrase it properly. How can I do that? Or can you be of help in maybe reimagining something? Sometimes they will say, you know what, that's an intriguing idea. And that's interesting to me so that I'm not doing the same rubber stamping all day long. But here's an interesting challenge for me to think about how to go about. So innovation, once you get past the hurdle of resistance and orthodoxy, becomes kind of contagious. People kind of like, you know, I mean, there are always going to be some outliers, but people kind of like a new idea. You know, you got to convince them that it might work and you got to convince them that it doesn't violate some core principle that they operate under. But innovation is also contagious.
Along that innovation line, this is a bit of a left turn, but it reminds me of a quote, and I can't recall who the the artist or who led the orchestra was, but they asked him about a young Miles Davis, and they said, you know, well, how's this new guy that you have playing trumpet, Miles Davis, doing? And he said, well, his learning isn't interfering with his performing. Okay. What's your take on that in so far as maybe even the relevancy of what we've been discussing?
Well, I think, you know, we're all learning things all the time. I mean, you know, I'm trained as a lawyer and as a legislator. And by definition, you're dealing with, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of different subject matters that you've got to kind of develop some level of expertise in a relatively short amount of time. So you're always learning. But, you know, you still have to, you know, particularly in my current job, you still have to deliver. You know, there are metrics that, you know, people look at. As you innovate, you still have to deliver your core business. So again, perfect being the enemy of the good concept, you can't get bogged down as you're learning such that you keep from delivering. You know, in most jobs, you don't have time, you know, once you get past the internship stage, you know, or some training stage, you don't have time to spend all of your time learning. You still have to deliver along the way. And I think that's a pretty accurate, you know, view of the world.
Yeah. And we'll just kind of align this outright is, what's your thoughts even on unlearning?
Well, yeah, that's true too. So if you are going to, you know, break change and innovate and things like that, you also have to break your own change. You also have to not live with your own orthodoxy, which means A, you got to challenge yourself, and B, you have to be willing to have other people challenge you. So a lot of time, particularly once you rise to a senior level where you have, you know, people who report to you, they show, you know, a significant amount of deference. And sometimes you have to encourage them to challenge you. And sometimes I tell people, oh, it's okay to challenge me, but you should be passionate about your challenge. So I want you to convince me that I'm wrong. So, you know, the more passionate you are about that, I may, you know, agree with you or I may say no, but a lot of what's going to help me decide is whether you firmly believe this.
What makes you so open to be willing to be challenged, where that's not something a lot of us, including myself, are often open to be doing?
You know, that's a good question. You know, it's almost like sitting on an analyst couch, you know, going through your childhood. But, you know, I come from a training as a lawyer where, you know, they kind of train you to be able to challenge things. And the concept is that, you know, you should be able to argue either side of a particular issue. I also come from, you know, a place in politics and in legislating where, you know, the rule or the statute may say X. And if I don't think that's the right thing, my first question is not how to comply with the rule. My question is, how many votes do I need to change the rule to make it better or to make it comport with whatever it is that I'm trying to do at the time? So maybe it's some of that, but I certainly, as much as I think I have confidence in my decision making, I certainly am not arrogant enough to think that it's perfect. So I want somebody to help make me better. You know, you tend to have, you know, like there are a lot of people who say, you know, I want the people working with me and for me to be smarter than me and to be able to correct mistakes of mine as opposed to just me looking over what they do and to challenge, you know, my thought process. Even if you've been doing stuff for a long time, you have a lot of confidence, there's stuff you miss. And so if you accept that you have some percentage of error rate, you reduce that by having people who you encourage to challenge your thought process too.
This is terrific. You're listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast, powered by Swinerton. We're talking today with Senator Kevin Murray, President and CEO of the Weingart Center. For more information, you can visit their website at weingart.org. Again, that's weingart.org. Senator, with business, commerce, and in general life evolving, what's changed in your experience with the Weingart Center over the last, say, 2 or 3 years?
I'll go back even further. So, when I came here in 2011, homelessness wasn't as part of the public zeitgeist as it is now. you would often go to funders or people and tell them what you were doing, and they would say, yeah, that's interesting, but we're into breast cancer or prostate cancer or lung cancer or children or education, and they weren't always interested in homelessness. The other thing is, I think homelessness, much like every other business, had an orthodoxy. So the people that we took into our services were all people who had kind of gone through the first step of a 12-step program, which is to, you know, admit you have a problem and, you know, commit to fixing it. And you can be successful there, but you won't have the breadth of impact because you exclude people who haven't gotten there, who aren't ready for that, or who make the decision not to accept your services. So, you know, one of the things that we've changed over the years is, you know, our willingness to meet people where they at and have a multi-pronged approach. You know, and again, you're doing more psychoanalysis of me than I've done than I've ever done in the past. But, you know, when I was in the legislature, one of the things I focused on was transportation networks. And in order to have a successful transportation network, you need to be multimodal. So you've got to have bike lanes, you've got to have highways, you've got to have streets, you've got to have trains, you've got to have trucks, you've got to have airports. And so the idea that you need a multi-pronged approach to most things is something that I take to heart and is sort of deeply ingrained in me. So I think that's what's changed is, you know, in homelessness, there's a continuum. Well, there are people who are severely mentally ill. There are people who are severely, you know, drug addicted. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are those people who are just what we would normally call down on your luck, you know, either made some mistake, you know, a, you know, series of mistakes, or had a series of things happen to them that put them in this situation. And there are, you know, lots of situations in between. So you need to have a multimodal approach. And I think that's what's changed over the years. If you read some of the articles that you see in the news, you know, local newspapers or news reports, you'll see that, you know, a couple of years ago, everyone was, we need to build permanent supportive housing and we need to build these permanent apartments. Now you see people saying, in addition to that, we also need temporary facilities. We also need transitional facilities. So we are moving more toward a multi-pronged approach. And what forced that to happen was, you know, the breadth of the problem became bigger. And more importantly, the breadth of the problem that people could see in their own neighborhoods became bigger. So now they want multiple solutions and they're not going to wait patiently for the perfect solution, back to our first concept. So, you know, the perfect solution might be, you know, have a nice apartment with a nice new kitchen and a bathroom for a person who is experiencing homelessness. Now we're like, since those take 2, 3, 4, 5 years to build, we're like, what do we do in the meantime? But it's not one or the other. It's a multi-pronged approach. So I think that's the biggest change.
Sir, what would you like to add to your show today that we may not have touched on that you you find important as well?
Well, I think if there was anything that I would emphasize on particularly the homeless problem and in life, it's just what we just talked about, that there are often multiple paths to a given end. And rather than always focus on pursuing what you think is the best path, sometimes multiple paths work. You know, sometimes having either multiple simultaneous paths or a plan A, B, and C works. I think in every situation, you always should have a plan B. Like you've got to, even if you come up with the perfect solution, you've got to ask yourself, what if that doesn't work? And, you know, to the extent that, you know, the listeners are in the construction business or the development business, they know inherently there's always going to be something which gets in your way. There's always, you know, a permit that doesn't come when you want it to come. There's always, you know, some hiccup. You know, you dig a hole in the ground and you find that there's stuff down there you didn't know that was down there. So that causes you. So you've got to have, you know, multiple ways to get where you're going.
Senator, it's been a real honor and joy having you on
Thank you.
The Modern Built Environment podcast.
you made me think about how I operate more than I do. So that's a benefit to me.
And you helped me think about how to learn and not go with the orthodoxy so much and actually even unlearn.
Yeah.
So this has been a highly productive and definitely an enjoyable interview with you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast powered by Swinerton. You can find us online at swinerton.com/podcast. Our guest today has been Senator Kevin Murray. Kevin is the president and chief executive officer of the Weingart Center Association. He has served in this position since 2011. Prior to his current role, Senator Murray founded the Murray Group in 2006, a legal and consulting firm specializing in public policy and entertainment, where he was managing partner. Before founding the Murray Group, Senator Murray served as senior vice president at the William Morris Agency, the nation's longest running and most diversified talent agency. For more information, feel free to visit the Weingart Association, the Weingart Center Association at weingart.org. Again, that's weingart.org. Join us again next time when we welcome another leading architect, engineer, builder, manufacturer, or civic leader committed to building a better and more beautiful built environment for healthier cities, communities, and lives. I'm Tom Dior.
The Modern Built Environment Podcast is recorded at the Swinerton headquarters and on location. The recording engineer is Stephen Blatton. The executive producer and host of the Modern Built Environment Podcast is Tom Dioro. And we're all assisted by Mr. Eric Foster. This is the Modern Built Environment Podcast by Swinerton.